through all the sort of stuff and gets to the point of a simple model that everybody can understand, because the real world is so complex. So what are your thoughts on this? You know, admittedly, it is a very simple model of how businesses work. And how does it play into your own thoughts about innovation?
Well, I think it's one of those good aspects that simple models are great because they bring you down to a sort of granular understanding of how things work. But the important thing is to try and also view it holistically, in the sense of what you're actually trying to achieve and how do the changes you can make at each granular basis, does that actually feed in to your endpoint goal, or is it an internal thing? So that I always think of it in the sense of when you work with social enterprises, and they have a whole, you know, they have a particular goal of achieving something good for society or for humanity or that type of thing. And that's absolutely great. But if they do it making a loss all the time, they're not going to do it very long. And so you have to recognize that you will be having to make adaptations to your model in order to ensure that you have sufficient revenue coming in or grants or whatever to allow you to continue. And so that becomes one of those factors which has to balance your overall goal in that sense. So that within an organization, you're having to have all those often conflicting sort of priorities in order to make the thing run smoothly. Because in fact, your endpoint goal is whatever you set that in terms of customer success or your own revenue or your own profits or whatever. But to do that, some people will be working against their own best interests. If, for example, those interests are, I don't want to have to work very hard, or I don't want to be able to talk to those people, the customers that are making a complaint. I don't want to talk to them, but actually it's important you talk to them in creating that a system that works in the right way so it fulfills the ultimate goal. So often it's looking at the whole system to say, actually, how can I balance the various ways of improving that? And if I bring in a new innovation into one aspect of it, how does it affect the whole system rather than how does it affect that one element of the system in the process of making that work? And again, how do you do that in an agile way? Because, as you say, people don't necessarily like that change, especially as they may not be the real beneficiary of the change. They may have to change something which actually benefits somebody else. So it's trying to understand that whole process. And I think that's where having an involvement of the staff is key, because they can see why it's being done and what the overall benefits to the company are. And secondly, that what you have is almost like a, I don't know if you remember the sort of phrase from Japanese manufacturing thing, it's Kaizen. That being continuous improvement, and rather than just doing the big changes, looking at how you can make small incremental changes as you go along, and how everybody within the team can actually input into those changes and be part of that sort of agility and innovation going forward. And I think if you create that environment and that responsiveness, then it's much easier to bring those new innovations in and for people to accept them and to then continue to contribute to make them better.
And actually, that's it's a point that's worth sort of bearing out is that in fact that there's the innovation that makes the headlines is the massive step change type innovation that is very visible, but actually there's much more incremental small slightly improved innovation going on. In reality, there's much more of that than there is of the massive step change innovation, but by nature of the fact that it's easier to make a small improvement than to do something completely different all the time.
And there's something I was thinking about with the coronavirus and change on that side. But something you don't really think about is that the supermarkets there's something like a 10 or 100-fold increase in the amount of deliveries that they did. And people say, oh, great, we just do more deliveries. Well, actually, the whole system to work in that way, so many things have to change. So how does the HR department suddenly recruit a whole load of extra people to do that when they can't interview them in the way that they used to interview them? How do you actually get a system whereby there are more people having to create and sort of service the orders, but without increasing the risk of cross-contamination?
Where do all the customized refrigerated vans suddenly come from?
Absolutely. And people don't sort of think about the whole process. And that's, again, where Tesco's or Sainsbury's or Ocado, whoever it is, their focus is on literally delivery, product delivery in that sense. And that's where their skills are and the logistics of making that happen. And there would have been hundreds and hundreds of different small innovations that have been undertaken to be able to make that work. The same with so many of the restaurants and cafes and that sort of thing becoming takeaways or doing things through Deliveroo or people like that. Now, suddenly, the big innovation is to say, well, Deliveroo was the big innovation. Well, it was, it wasn't, again, it was back to mobile phones and payment systems. But one of the big innovations that comes from that is actually doing delivery of restaurant meals from a restaurant is a real pain in the butt. Why do we have separate kitchens which just cook for the delivery market? And that's become the big thing now, that quite often when you're getting the sort of food delivered, it's not coming from the restaurants, it's coming from tailor-made sort of bespoke kitchens, which are then efficient in that way. But there's a whole change that came in to be able to do that. So it's that flow of innovation and how the people within it can make improvements and can contribute to it.
Okay, so I think that's fascinating. And I think that what you're discussing there is it's not just the innovation, it's the change that innovation brings that also needs to be managed. So you've got to think about overcoming resistance. You've got to think about embedding. You've got to think about how you make it stick. You've got to think about how you make it work, as you say, in the light of the whole system, not just in the light of perhaps the specific capability, in my terminology, that you are attempting to improve in some shape or form, right?
That's right. And that's where sometimes creating a different environment to allow that innovation to grow can be important, because you're taking away some of the issues that the larger company have in terms of, you're not dealing with necessarily with legacy systems. You're not dealing with your incumbent big customer base that might not want that change straight away. But also, you still got to pay your staff, pay the shareholders, all those other things. And so you create a safe environment to be able to be risky, if that makes sense. That you want to give people the opportunity to take those risks and to try out new ideas, and whether that's exploring new markets or whether it's
I think it totally makes sense, Mike, because I think, again, it comes back to this sort of culture thing where like you were giving us the example of the bank, and I was sort of saying before that about how I think that like the salesperson who was remunerated to do X, and if he started doing Y, then actually that would reduce that person's ability to earn an income, and hardly likely to do it, however much they might be delivered training on doing it, if that's the case. And similarly with the bank, if the member of staff is effectively measured on reducing risk, for example, are they going to naturally take risks? It's going to be hard to do that. So I think that change, as we've both said, change can be uncomfortable and difficult to deal with. People are resistant to it. There is resistance to innovation for all sorts of reasons. And I think that you do need to sort of, it's got a, innovation itself might not come from management, but I think you'd agree with me that the culture of innovation starts with management. Would that be fair to say?
Well, absolutely, because management is as conservative as the rest of the organisation.
Well, and they set the theme of culture, don't they? They set how the culture is. If they behave in a certain way, and if their expectations are known to be a certain type of expectation, then everyone else is going to align to it, right?
Well, that's right. And I think it's obviously they're looking to create stability. They're looking to create sort of controlled and managed growth on that side, which has led to a lot of the larger companies setting up their own innovation centers or accelerators and that. But then often the danger with that is the fact they think, oh, right, I've done that, tick in the box, my shareholders will be happy or the board's happy, I've set up an innovation center. And then they treat it as a completely separate activity, which has nothing to do with the core business. And unless you're using it to be able to pilot new ideas and gain feedback from innovation on that side, it's not really feeding into the corporate strategy.
Yeah, and you lose all that immediacy and juiciness of all the sort of tacit knowledge of everybody else. That was kind of what we were talking about getting everybody involved. Like you said, getting the people involved in it is so important. Okay. Well, I am aware of the time, and I know we've been talking for ages, and I want to respect your time, Mike. So we've covered a lot of ground, for which many thanks. And it has been a really fascinating conversation. But before we end, I would like just to ask, if you don't mind, is there any sort of overall or general advice about the process of innovation that you might be able to share with us that you can recommend, and perhaps particularly for the types of organization that the people who will be listening to this podcast will tend to be working for, which is software as a service?
Okay. I think one of the key things is to be open to learn from outside your own organization and outside your own sector. Yeah, from that side. So look at what other people are doing, and there is no harm in pinching other people's innovations and seeing how they can apply within your own. The second thing, I think, as we've already talked about, is trying to involve people in a managed way, whether that's within your own team or whether it's sort of working with your customers in a particular way. And it's be able to have that conversation, which is actually to listen to your customers and talk to them about your product as opposed to selling to them, which is quite difficult for some people on that side. And thirdly, to be able to pilot and test quickly, as we've talked about in terms of that agility, and finding ways of being able to expose a small number of customers or users in the organization to say, does this work? Is this making an improvement in what we do? And recognizing that in some cases, you're going to be challenging your customers or your users to think differently and to push them along, and how you incentivize them to do that. So it's looking at it from in terms of bringing in ideas from outside, creating a sort of agile platform which can sort of get that feedback and work with people, understanding the metrics from both your customers and users' point of view, as well as your internal measures of success.
Right. Mike, thank you very much indeed for coming onto the podcast show to share your knowledge and experience over what I know has been many years of working with literally hundreds of innovators. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I've learned a lot. Mike, once again, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
My pleasure, Rick.
And before you go, perhaps there are people listening who would quite like to engage with you, because, of course, you are now offering your services as a consultant in business growth and business innovation. So what's the best way for people to get hold of you if they do want to talk to you about your consultancy services?
Probably the best way to find me is through LinkedIn. That's got a good sort of summary of the type of work that I do and the type of people I've worked with. And I'm easy to find on that. So you can email me directly on mike@herd.uk.net or directly message me through LinkedIn.
Cool. And your LinkedIn profile is linkedin.com/in/mike-herd, as in a herd of cows, /consultant.
Yeah, not herd immunity. We don't talk about that.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Mike. And just to remind everybody else, I've been talking to Mike Hurd. Mike is a business consultant focusing on growth through innovation. And we've been talking about how innovation is the way out of the crisis. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please remember to share it with your friends and colleagues. And also please do check back at practicalcsm.com regularly for more free customer success related podcast videos and articles. And finally, if you've not already done so, please go to our website at practicalcsm.com and sign up for our free monthly newsletter. My name is Rick Adams from practicalcsm.com, and I just want to say thank you very much for listening to this podcast, and I look forward to talking to you again in future episodes.